Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today we will finish reading the October-November 2024 issue of Guideposts with Family Room, and then begin reading the December-January 2025 issue of Guideposts with regular features like The Upside. Family Room. Meet the people in our pages. Dave Coombs, Special Delivery, page 64, remains in near daily contact with Shantia and her family. This past June, he attended Mariah's fifth grade graduation. "They make me feel like part of the family," Dave says. This isn't his first story to appear in Guideposts. His first, about his composition Rachel's Song, was published in September 1994. Within 2 weeks, 10,000 readers had contacted him to buy his music. Dave has recorded 14 instrumental albums and written a memoir, Touched by the Music. Not a day passes that he doesn't remember his beloved wife, Linda. "She was the one who always encouraged me in my music," Dave says. Linda knew something about achieving goals. She was controller of the United States from 2005 to 2007 and served under Presidents Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and George W. Bush in financial executive positions. In 2014, she became state controller of North Carolina, the first woman to hold the office. She got her start in politics when she ran for our local school board in 1980. Dave says she received more votes locally than President Reagan, a fact he always delighted and reminded Linda of when she went to work for him. To find out more about Dave, visit Combs Music, C-O-M-B-S, music.com, or subscribe to his YouTube channel, Combs Music. Doctor, heal thyself, Jesus says in the Gospel of Luke. Neurosurgeon and author Lee Warren, Lucky Chuck, page 18, now based in Nebraska, has done just that. His latest book, Hope is the First Dose, explains how he healed from the grief of losing his son. Drawing from scripture, neuroscience, and his own experience, Lee shows how to train your brain to become more resilient, hopeful, and grounded in faith. What the Bible says in Romans is true. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, Lee says. God can renew your mind even when everything else goes wrong. Lucky Chuck, the terminal brain tumor patient who touched off Lee's healing, understood all that and more. "He was hilarious," Lee remembers. "He corrected my grammar and poked fun at me for being a highfalutin doctor." Lucky Chuck's most important insight: your circumstances don't have to determine your peace of mind and joy, Lee says. He was so convinced of his hope in the resurrection. I was inspired by him. 3 decades after sharing her story with inmates at San Quentin, Gigi Biblow, Not So Different After All, page 28, remains a passionate advocate for the life-saving power of 12-step recovery. She speaks at conferences, serves as a sponsor for people recovering from addiction, and continues to share her story in homeless shelters and rehab centers. After getting sober at age 28, Gigi married, raised 3 kids, and pursued a career in corporate recruiting. Now 70, she says people who hear her speak in public have trouble imagining that this church lady and Bible teacher was ever an out-of-control drunk. They take one look at me and say, "She never drank. What does she know?" Gigi says with a laugh. Then I start to tell my story and you see the lights come on, and they're like, "Holy moly, she knows." Gigi's explanation of what makes 12-step meetings effective sounds a little like reading Guideposts. It's that beautiful identification that happens when you hear someone's story you relate to. We identify with the feelings of hopelessness, and we take inspiration that if that person became sober, so can we. Never underestimate the power of stories, Gigi says. At 12-step meetings, we sit in rooms where miracles happen every week. Nikki Cooper's The Kids Are All Right, page 54, twin sons, now college sophomores, continue to amaze her. During their last 2 years of high school, they and 2 friends formed a band called Paracosm, with Breckham on guitar and Brennan on bass and lead vocals. Nikki and the mothers of the other boys call themselves the Paracosm Moms and cheered them on at all their gigs. Breckham is a sophomore at the University of Oklahoma, majoring in film. He and his girlfriend, also a film major, enjoy making short films together. Brennan is a music business major at Belmont University in Nashville and plays drums in a band he formed calling Barracuda Disco. Nikki is in her 27th year of teaching. She earns extra money for her son's tuitions by flipping furniture, tutoring, babysitting, and freelance writing. "I'll always miss the days when my boys were little," she says, "but I'm so proud of the men they have become. Remembering the past isn't nearly as fun as imagining the bright future that lies ahead for them." Harold G. Koning has found that living an abundant life, page 39, includes doing work that gives a sense of meaning and purpose. In addition to researching spirituality and health, he would see patients as director of psychiatric services at Duke's Geriatric Evaluation and Treatment Clinic. Harold is the author of the Spiritual Readiness book series, which grew out of a training course he co-led in 2022 for U.S. and Ukrainian military chaplains and leaders. Spiritual readiness is a strength of spirit that enables the believer to overcome with honor the challenges to faith in their daily life, he says. We are all involved in the battle of sorts in terms of coping with the many challenges that life throws at us. The series has books for believers in each of the five major faith traditions, from Christianity to Buddhism, and one for non-believers. The Spiritual Readiness series is available through Amazon in paperback and Kindle versions. Subscribers, if the post office alerts us that the magazine is undeliverable, we have no further obligation unless we receive a corrected address within 1 year of postal notification. That concludes the October-November 2024 issue of Guideposts. We'll now begin the December-January 2025 issue of Guideposts. Editor's Note by Edward Grinnan, Editor-in-Chief. Abundant Grace. This issue features an excerpt from our popular annual devotional, Walking in Grace. For years, we called the book Daily Guideposts, then changed the title after asking readers how the devotions made them feel and what they thought the book should be called. Walking in Grace, they told us. I'd written hundreds of devotions for Daily Guideposts, and the new title took some getting used to. But what a lovely word, grace. I was taught that grace was freely and universally given by God, a divine constant. Astrophysicists talk of the relic radiation called the cosmic microwave background that permeates all of space, a faint residual background glow that is virtually uniform throughout the observable universe. Generated at the very time of creation, it is our proof of the Big Bang. Isn't grace a concurrent phenomenon that permeates the spiritual realm? It is God's very signature on the moment of creation, a divine echo that exists everywhere throughout the time, connecting all souls. An old Southern adage might put it best, grace is like grits, it comes with everything. There are moments when I feel a sudden uplift of my soul. The moment just comes, the inner glow of grace, and I try to hold on to it. It can be the sound of a waterfall, the serene breathing of my slumbering golden Gracie, the unexpected pleasure of an old rerun, sometimes just knowing that God is hearing me. We, Walking in Grace writers, capture those moments in brief, inspiring stories and share them with readers, as if we all belong to a community of grace. Turn to page 65 and see how my friend Ginger Rue discovered the grace of a kind word. May grace find you and your family in this joyous season, and may you find grace in abundance in the coming year. To order your copy of Walking in Grace 2025, go to guideposts.org/WIG. The Upside, quotes from today's positive thinkers. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to feel that magic of what their faith means to them, to go out, look up at the stars, and imagine that star long, long ago, Savannah Guthrie, today's show co-anchor on her Christmas traditions. Don't confuse who you are with where you are. Faith Broussard Cade, author, speaker, and counselor. I always practice with the kids what I practice in my own life. Have a positive attitude, be thankful, try to help others. Peter Westbrook, 1984 Olympic fencing bronze medal winner, whose foundation teaches fencing and life skills to underserved kids in New York City. Every moment God gives us is extraordinary. Good moments become good memories, and bad moments, if viewed from the right perspective, become good lessons. Tim Timberlake, pastor and author. That we fall is inevitable, but it is equally inevitable that we are drawn to pick each other up. From You Don't Have to Do It Alone by Mark Nepo. Stop obsessing over the lasts. Be ready to greet the first and yet unseen necks that are coming around the bend. Look alive. They'll be here any minute now. Maggie Smith, poet. I've realized that whenever I turtle step forward, I tend to achieve my goals. And when I try to rush forward, I almost always fail. Martha Beck, life coach and author. Everybody's got a bigger heart at Christmas time. Reba McEntire, author and singer. I believe God guides us using our circumstances, just as I pay attention to the subtle cues that my dogs use to guide my steps, so I must also listen to God, who knows the best path. Michael Hingson, author of Live Like a Guide Dog, True Stories from a Blind Man and His Dogs About Being Brave, Overcoming Adversity, and Moving Forward in Faith. The first message of Christmas is fear not, the birth of Jesus banishes our fears. Anne Bezokamp, writer. This scale can only give you a numerical reflection of your relationship with gravity. That is it. It cannot measure beauty, talent, person, purpose, possibility, strength, love of character. Sign above a scale posted on Instagram by Mary Claire Haver, MD. The most sophisticated and intelligent people I know are the ones willing to challenge their thinking and admit there's more to learn. Brad Meltzer, novelist and nonfiction writer. No matter what your Christmas season will look like, whether it's exactly what you imagined or the exact opposite of your holiday dreams, bring it all to Jesus anyway. He's with you in the mess, and he's making your messy moments into holy ones. Abersta Chichu, writer on Learning to Appreciate the Imperfect Christmas. Send an uplifting quote from a newsmaker or yourself to upside@guideposts.org. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guidepost's other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts Online. This story is from The Joys of Christmas, Guideposts 2022. The Joy of Friends and Family, starring Dad. Maybe it wasn't Jimmy Stewart's most convincing role, but to his daughter, it was his most unforgettable. By Kelly Stewart Hardcourt, Davis, California. How well do any of us really know our parents? The whole world, it seemed, knew my dad, Jimmy Stewart. A few years after my twin sister Judy and I were born, Look magazine named him the most popular movie star on the planet. To us, he was just plain Dad. We loved how he'd fold his lanky frame down to our level and pull us up on his lap for a story. His folksy, halting drawl left us in stitches. He was so loving and good-natured, we hated to upset him. Sometimes, though, we heard the disappointed voice instead of the laughing one. Judy and I weren't always angels. Today, people tell me they can't hear Dad's voice without thinking of Christmas and his portrayal of George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. But I'm partial to one of his later holiday roles. It had a limited run before a very select audience. It was 1958. Judy and I were 7, and our family was spending the holidays in Hawaii. You think we'd be thrilled, but we were wondering if it would even feel like Christmas so far from home. There'd be no singing carols on the piano bench next to Dad, his long fingers gracefully skimming across the keys. No Christmas dinner in the formal dining room, and what really mattered, how would Santa know where to bring our presents? We asked about it night after night in our prayers, and Mom assured us again and again that Santa would find us, even in Hawaii. But there'd be no chimney to slide down in a hotel room. How would he even get in our room? Christmas Eve, the hours drag by. Finally, Mom announced, "It's time for little girls to get to bed. Santa won't come until you're asleep." She was already in her nightgown, and Dad had on his blue and white striped pajamas. Even with his long arms and the sleeves fell past his wrists. Judy and I got in bed and looked at each other. Didn't have to say a word to know we were thinking the same thing. This didn't feel like the night before Christmas at all. There wasn't even a place to put our stockings. Mom and Dad kissed us goodnight, and for the first time in my young life, I fell asleep dreading Christmas morning. The next thing I knew, Mom was shaking me. "Dad went out to get a newspaper, and there was a knock on the door," she said. "Wake up and see who's here." I sat up and rubbed the sleep out of my eyes. There was Santa. "Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, Kelly and Julie, Judy," our visitor said, laughing merrily, his voice deep and powerful. It was really fun. White beard, red suit, black boots, and a big belly. Though he was taller than I had imagined, Santa sat down and Judy and I scrambled onto his lap. I felt so comfortable, as if I'd sat there hundreds of times. Everything about him felt so familiar. I looked closely at Santa. I didn't recognize his face covered with mounds of white beard, but I'd seen those hands before, those long fingers, and sticking out ever so slightly from one red sleeve was the cuff of his pajamas with those blue and white stripes. Mom and Dad were trying to fool us into thinking that Santa had come. "So Santa, how you doing?" I asked, punching him playfully on the shoulder. Judy looked at me in astonishment. With a wink, I shared my skepticism. She nodded. Now she knew that what our parents were up to. "Yeah, Santa, old boy," Judy joined in. "Long trip, eh? How are those reindeers doing?" "Ho, ho," Santa boomed. "Why, they're having breakfast. They eat hay and mangoes here in Hawaii. They sure do like soaking up some sun before we head back to the North Pole." On and on, Judy and I went. We couldn't break him. He had an answer for everything, delivered with that jolly, booming voice and twinkling eyes. By the time we hugged our visitor goodbye and he reminded us to be good girls, my stomach was churning. What if he was the real deal? What happened to little girls who were rude to Santa? Mom told us to wash our hands before breakfast and then we'd see what Santa had brought us. She seemed irritated. In the bathroom with Judy, I was nearly in tears. "I think that really was Santa," I whispered. "He didn't sound like Dad at all." "We were so mean to him," Judy said. "Mom's not happy," I said. "She'll tell Dad when he gets back from the store. They'll be so disappointed in us." But Judy thought of something far worse. What if Santa takes our presents away? What if he leaves us with coal? There was no doubt what was in store for us, and we'd brought it upon ourselves by not trusting Mom and Dad. We walked out to the breakfast table quaking. There sat Dad. "Merry Christmas," he cried, sounding just like George Bailey. "I hear Santa drop by. Boy, I wish I'd been here." We went to his chair and he lifted us up onto his lap, his long arms hugging us close. Soon we were telling him all about Santa and everything we'd said and done. He didn't scold us. In fact, he laughed so hard there were tears rolling down his cheeks, like he was hearing it all for the first time. I've long forgotten what Santa brought us that year, but I will never forget the greatest gift of that Christmas, the knowledge that Mom and Dad loved us so much that they would do everything in their power to help make our prayers come true. More Than a Movie, It's a Wonderful Life. Academy Award-winning actor Jimmy Stewart returned home from a 3-year tour with the Air Force during World War II feeling lost. His time serving in the military had changed him, and his movie contract with MGM had expired. What if Hollywood no longer had a place for him? Was his acting career over? Then Stewart landed the lead role of George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life. His character, a suicidal man, is sent an angel to show him what the world would be like without him. In one scene, George was at the lowest point of his life and didn't know where else to turn. He prays, "I'm at the end of my rope. Show me the way, God." The scripted lines stirred up real emotions. As I said those words, I felt the loneliness, the hopelessness of people who had nowhere to turn, said Stewart. I broke down sobbing. This was not planned at all, but the power of that prayer, the realization that our Father in heaven is there to help the hopeless, had me reduced to tears. The experience was profoundly life-changing. Decades after its 1947 debut, It's a Wonderful Life is enjoyed by millions every Christmas. A reminder that even in our darkest moment, God lights the way. Elena Tofone, Editor. Another story from The Joys of Christmas 2022, The Joy of Prayer. Believe, always believe. A father-turned-grandfather remembers sharing all the joys of the season with his young sons. By Rick Hamlin, Contributing Editor. Now that my two sons are fathers themselves with babes in their arms, I yearn to remind them how Christmas is that season of the impossible, how full of opportunities it is for parents to show their children what it means to hold on to faith. But then again, didn't my sons experience this firsthand? They saw their dad setting out candles in the window soon as Advent hit, their mother still ladling out the last of the Thanksgiving turkey soup. Every night they watched expectantly as I plugged in the lights, our family bathing in the glow that said, "Christmas is coming. Christmas is almost here." We took down the box marked Christmas Creche, and with help, the boys set up the painted wooden figurines, Joseph and Mary, the shepherds and the sheep, and the wise men bearing gifts. The latter they positioned across the room from the stable so that we could move them a little closer day by day on their way to Bethlehem. The manger was at the center of everything, but it stayed empty for now. "Why is it empty, Dad?" they asked, even though they knew the answer, holding the infant in swaddling clothes in their little hands. "The baby doesn't come until Christmas," I said. They'd like to hear me say it. Waiting, more waiting, but waiting was part of the joy, the excitement, the sheer anticipation of the Christmas story unfolding. Taking it all on faith, like accepting without reservation that Santa would bring the things they asked for, toy race cars, a Lego castle, baseball mitts, that video game to be played only after homework was done, and things they never expected appearing like magic on Christmas morn. The tree had to be fetched from the Vermont farmers who brought fragrant pines and firs to the big city and sold them down at the corner. The boys helped their dad pick out the perfect one, carrying it back up the hill with him and setting it up in the living room. With their parents, they festooned it with lights and ornaments, including ones they had crafted themselves, a string of dyed noodles, felt stockings, a tinseled star for the top. Then they stepped back, admiring their work, imagining what the tree would look like with the packages underneath, bearing their names, Tim, William, with tags signed from Santa. Until then, there was the Advent calendar with a window to open each day and a wreath on the dining room table with four candles to light, one for each week of waiting. There were the carols the boys sang at the piano next to their father as he plunked out the notes to the first Noel, Away in the Manger and Joy to the World, and all the preparation for the pageant at church. Every year brought different parts to play, from William flapping homemade angel wings to a well-fleeced Tim baaing like a sheep as he scampered up and down the sanctuary aisle. Christmas Eve was on its way, the Savior to be born in Bethlehem, and Santa coming down the chimney with his bag of gifts. Even if we didn't have a chimney in our New York apartment, Santa would find a way. The boys put out a glass of milk for him and hung up their stockings, knitted by their grandmother, with their names on top so Santa would know whose was whose. The last thing before bed was reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and the story from the Bible of the shepherds out in the fields abiding their flock by night. Visions of sugar plum and video games filled the boys' heads as they fell asleep and their parents did the work of Santa, being sure to finish the glass of milk for him. Morning activity came with the dawn, the stockings full, the rug under the tree hidden by bows and boxes. Their parents watched joyfully as the boys unwrapped each present, marveling at how Santa knew their heart's desires. Prayers answered, faith fulfilled. See, it was all true. But I'll never forget that Christmas Day after all the gifts that had been opened and 5-year-old Tim and I were taking down the trash. He paused on the stairs and looked up at me with trusting eyes. "Daddy," he said, "I know that you and Mom are Santa. Is that true?" I wondered what I should say. I didn't want to disappoint him, but I didn't want to fib. "Yes," I said, "we are." He took it in, then paused. "You're teasing me," he said, not ready to let go of the impossible. He was practicing how to hold on to the true faith he would grow into, a faith that would never disappoint. We hugged and went back to the tree, to the lights, to the creche, which now had long-awaited babe in it. Believe, always believe, I want to say now to Tim and William as they hold their sons in their arms. It's never too early to show your children how. Back to Guideposts, December-January 2025, Spirit Lifting. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. John 16, verse 33, NIV. I thought a visit to the zoo would cheer me up, but I was feeling beset with problems, relationships that had gone off the rails, butting heads with coworkers, financial worries. I glanced at the news on my phone. Was it just me, or did it sometimes seem as if the world had gone crazy? I put my phone down and looked up at a giraffe, who was looking back at me, chewing. The Almighty must have been in a whimsical mood when he made giraffes. Everything about them is crazily exaggerated. An 18-inch tongue, outrageous eyelashes, hooves the size of dinner plates, and of course the signature long neck. Staring up at this gentle, silent animal calmed me. I reminded myself that I live out of my life in the palm of God's hand. I sometimes feel discombobulated, but this world has not spun out of the Father's control. In the end, all will be well. Still chewing, the giraffe seemed to nod. Father, help me remember that nothing is going to happen that I cannot handle with your help. Lewis Lotz. To enjoy more devotions from all God's creature, go online and order at guideposts.org/DEOV. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.